Happy Halloween Sunday. This is Swan.
And this is Nathan.
And you're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks for tuning in. What was there?
No, that was super seamless.
Yeah, I think we're getting real good at that.
I think so too.
It's almost like we do it every week. Yeah, so that's fun. So today you get to listen to Nathan and I, and we're going to pick each other's brains about books that scare and concepts that scare, and it's going to be a real good time. Well, let's start with something a little bit more lighthearted, which is the costumes of Halloween. Always a fun adventure for people to dress up in, like, alter egos.
I always try to do, like, low-key Halloween costumes throughout. Oh, there we go.
Oh, my God.
I was wondering. I was like, I can't hear
you. You know?
Could anyone hear me?
I heard you because you're in the studio. So
that's really funny.
I've been talking to myself this whole time. That's great. Let's start again. This is Swan.
And this is Nasa.
Hi, Nasa. You're listening to
Ink and Worm
on Radio Free Brooklyn.
It was like I was gone. Like I might have been a ghost and the only person who could hear me was
Swan.
Oh,
my goodness.
What? Halloween
that's
fans.
That's pretty trippy. Yes. That could have been an interesting show, perhaps, though, of me just like carrying on a conversation, but everyone just hears one side. I think it would get old quickly.
Yeah, but that would be eerie.
It'd be like, who is she talking
What's
to?
Happening?
It could it make people wonder, perhaps. They're like, was this intentional? And the answer is always yes.
Always. but yeah, low-key Halloween costumes are one of my favorite things to do, which I'm kind of pulling off right now.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun to dress up every day of the year, but Halloween gives you certain liberties to go above and beyond the normal, social, accepted things. So I was thinking it. I was thinking back through my history of costumes, and I think I was mentioning to you the literary costumes I've had were Anne of Green Gables, because I'm a redhead, so that's a given. And the same one, Pippi Longstocking, again, because like, how could you not? I have the hair.
Yeah.
I'm kind of crazy. So
I wish that I had more, but what I have are pretty obvious, and they walk the line between TV and books.
Mm-hmm.
I have Bellatrix Lestrange, which,
yes.
For those who know what I look like, I have very curly hair and sharp
and
features,
also,
I would say. Dark, sharp features. What?
And also a little crazy.
And also I'm a little crazy. So I blend into it very well. And then also, and I just thought of this, Catwoman, who's technically from a comic book.
Yep, graphic novel.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is, like, the kids just get me. Like, anyone, like, four or under wearing anything that's literary
makes,
like, oh, that's amazing.
They usually pull it off so well,
They
too.
Can pull off
it's
anything.
Like, beautiful.
Yeah.
No, it's true. Kids are pretty cute.
As long as they're not crying.
Right?
That being said, well, I want to talk a little bit about the things that scared us as kids. And little did I know that Nasa is very well-versed in urban legends. So would you like to introduce
I
the
am.
Topic?
Okay. So my family is very into scary things, obviously. So I'm going to go ahead and, I guess, read my favorite urban legend.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah. Okay. I'm really excited about this.
Well, and I would also like to echo what you said earlier, is that urban legends seem to be one oral tradition that has kind of held through the death of a lot of other oral traditions.
Yes.
It's kind of become like it's filled that need for people to tell each other stories. It's just like,
and it's funny because everyone knows urban legends, knows a version of these stories, but
they're always localized
different. Yeah, even this one that I'm going to share, when I originally heard it was completely different, and I will tell the story or the part that I know as well. So I'll read what I have online, and then I'll
and then
go
the
ahead
way that it's different,
say how it is for me, and then why it resonated, I suppose. So
great.
A beautiful young girl is left home alone with only her dog to protect her. On the news that night, they announce there is a serial killer on the loose in the area. Before she goes to bed, she locks all the doors and tries to lock all the windows, but the one in the basement won't lock. She decides to leave it unlocked but locks the door and goes to bed. Her dog takes its customary place under the bed. In the deep of the night, she awakens to a dripping sound coming from her bathroom. Half awake, the girl feels the comforting lick from her dog and falls back to sleep. She reawakens to the dripping sound, reaches her hand under the bed to the dog, where she feels the reassuring lick, and falls again back to sleep. Once more, she awakens to the dripping sound. She reaches her hand down, feels the lick of the dog. Now curious about the dripping sound, she gets up and slowly walks towards the bathroom. The dripping gets louder as she approaches. She reaches the bathroom, turns on the light. She's greeted by a horrific sight. Hanging from the shower nozzle is her dog with its throat slit and its blood dripping into the bathtub. Something on the bathroom mirror catches her eye. She turns around. Written on the wall in her dog's blood are the words, "Humans can lick too."
Ah! That's so creepy.
I know. So and the version that I heard, she was told that the madmen often would pick a disguise and try and trick people that way. So she's locked in, and she's been having her dog lick her the entire time, and she hears a knock on her door, and it's a policeman who's like, "I'm the police, let me in." And she starts to freak out because, no, that's the madman, that's the madman. And she has the dog comfort. The man breaks into her door, or into her dorm, because she's in college, and reaches under her bed, like jumps at her, reaches under her bed, and pulls out
the guy,
the madman. So the entire story, she's being comforted by the dog. She hears the noise downstairs. The dog's comforting her. The dog's comforting her. And it turns out it was the guy all along.
Never. That makes me sad, though, too, because the dog.
I know. It's really hard.
Which speaks to, I think, a theme in anything that's uncomfortable or scary is just that there's this twisting of innocence. So, like, the villain is, like, something that ordinarily would be something harmless, like a kitten or a child.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's, like, innocence being, like, you know, that naivete that gullible, yeah, being taken advantage to someone's detriment, and you're just like, no, why can't she be more like skeptical of the world? Not everyone's trustworthy.
I mean, I think that's the thing that always freaks us out, is this idea of the things we can count on and the things that we don't even think about, yeah, them being the things that lead us into this I can't find the word.
And moving on.
Misarray!
Just kidding.
Sorry.
But urban legends, I like, they are also reminiscent of telling scary stories around the campfire scenario.
Did you ever used to do that?
A little bit as a kid. And I'm just trying to remember, you know, a lot of maniacs in the woods, and you're just on this innocent camping trip, and and unbeknownst to you, there's some horrible person out on the loose that takes over your camp one by one.
My biggest fear growing up used to be the idea of somebody just like behind curtains.
Ooh.
Like curtains.
Oh my God. No, curtains. Okay, so we're talking about things that scare us. Not necessarily window curtains, which I don't know why those aren't the same. But if I go to someone's house and I've never been there before and their shower curtain is drawn, I always have to peek behind it and be like, okay, it is an empty bathtub.
Which is funny because I always draw my shower curtain so that no one can see how messy my shower is.
Yeah, no, I do that too. So it's like I can't fault people for utilizing the shower curtain in a logistical way. But if I'm in a bathroom with a shower curtain, I'm certainly peeking before I'm peeing.
Oh, definitely. I have to do that. Even when I'm in my own house, I have to do it because of urban
mine
legends.
Mine is see-through.
Like, oh, well, that makes sense.
So I'm like, yep, that's nothing useful in there.
But because of urban legends, like the dogs or humans, I don't know, the licking
something
hand,
happened.
The hand lick.
Bathrooms are a huge
bathrooms
theme in like,
so, yeah, they are
horror films, horror novels, like this enclosed space, maybe that there's lots of hard objects for you to, I don't know.
Well, I think it's because the bathroom is your most private space.
You're most vulnerable there.
Yeah, because you don't, like, you will do things you will do literally nowhere else in the world. In your bathroom. Yeah. So, or in a bathroom spaces. So I think it's like, just being that vulnerable.
Like, I guess you think about private spaces and, of course,
the peak of it. And to think that somebody else has been in that space, has invaded it without your knowledge.
Yeah.
It's just, it means that they can go anywhere.
It's disturbing. The other one, the urban legend that scares me is, well, there's like the two, the guy with the hook as a hand instead of, he's a funny art, like funny trope to like, how many people in this world actually have hooks?
Right?
A few, like legitimately people have hands that are hooks. I don't want to like say it's absurd, but it's very rare.
I mean, nowadays it's significantly more rare.
Because people have like prosthetics,
or
some sort of a grabber instead of a hook.
Yeah.
And then the other one is just like someone being in the back seat of your car.
Oh, that one used to freak me
out. Yeah, that one would get me.
It's that same thing of someone being in your space when they're not supposed to be. It's the same reason I'm always afraid.
Or you were never expecting it from there.
Yeah, it's why I'm always afraid to like look out my window if I'm on the first floor, look in the curtain. And I always have to do it because
otherwise you won't sleep.
Like, someone is going to just stand there and invade my space, and I need to be aware of my space at all time. Yeah.
Well,
I freak out because of that.
Let's go a little further back. I want to talk more about, so I think urban legends and ghost stories, campfire stories come into play like middle school, high school. Let's go back a little bit further and talk about the things that scared us as children. I'll go first. For me, Roald Dahl was really heavy influence in my like childhood, like experience in general, but also of having either villains or characters that are just so nasty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand that. I have weird ones.
Yes.
Yes? Okay. So one of them, and I don't know, I guess forgive me, it falls under the line of urban legend. Well, not urban legends, but oral traditions. It's a Native American story that I heard like as a little kid in a science museum. I was like 4 or 5, and it really screwed up my understanding of science.
Okay.
But it was about, so the legend was how earthquakes came to be, and that was that there is a giant, an invisible giant, who was asleep. And whenever he woke up, the ground would shake. And one day, the big one, the quote-unquote big one, mm-hmm. was going to happen when he was like violently woken up, and then everyone would be destroyed. And so for like
what can
years,
we do?
Years, like well into like 10 or 11, I was just like, well, there's a giant.
Add to the story, you grew up in California where earthquakes are much more common.
Yep.
Yeah. So.
And previous to that, I wasn't afraid of earthquakes at all. I actually thought they were a lot of fun. But then after that, anytime I felt vibration or anything, it would freak me out because it was a thing I was unable to stop. I was powerless to.
Well, I mean, having no power is very critical in terms of things being scary.
Yeah.
I feel like that's the whole point, is that these things have more power than you do.
Exactly.
In whatever way.
And there it goes into, like, weird cartoons. And Blue Meanies. The Yellow Submarine.
Great. So yeah, Roald Dahl for me it was the witches were really creepy, and especially when they came out with the film with Angelica Houston as head witch.
Ooh.
Ooh, yeah. I lost some sleep over that one. And then the Trunchbull Matilda.
Right. She was terrifying.
So wicked.
She was so scary.
Yeah.
To a degree, Willy Wonka also.
He's a little bit like, he's got this, like, I think
you
can't really see his intentions.
Yeah.
He's very, like, self-absorbed.
That's an interesting type of scary, because he's obviously, like, not the bad guy. If anything, he
saves the day.
Well, he saves Charlie. I mean, the
and
other kids
family.
Do not end up well.
No, they end up alive.
But it's that. It's
he's so
same.
Casual about it, too, though, of like, oh, yeah, he's going to the incinerator.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The mom's freaking out. He's like, you know, maybe they don't light it on Tuesdays. I'll have to check. And it's just
we'll
like
see.
So casual of like mortal peril.
But like,
interesting.
It's like not to bring this in the mix too early, but like the original Santa Claus has that same kind of.
Tell me more.
Well, you know, with the. I'm trying to think of The Office, the bad Santa Claus who would like come and take children and beat them, whereas the good Santa Claus would give them presents.
Interesting. I'm actually not familiar with the dual nature of Santa Claus.
Yeah, because if you couldn't reward
so, like,
your kids with presents,
and the bad Santa Claus maybe has been transmuted into a lump of coal.
Yeah, exactly.
Rather
over
than
time,
like,
but like
punishment.
there was a while where Santa Claus would always go hand in hand with this other person who would be cruel and who would like take the kids and beat them and like, yeah. I wish I could remember. I can look it up really fast, but for people who are familiar with The Office, Rainn Wilson's character is always like, this guy.
Huh. I'm not as familiar with that. It's like, so a lot of the things, so I was reading a little bit and R.L. Stine talks about how
Krampus.
Krampus.
Hmm. Krampus. There we go. Thank you.
Thank you, Google. R.L. Stine was talking about how he feels like things, fear has elements of universality to it, that people are generally afraid of the same things. Mm. And he, so that's something to talk about of like, so, you know, you make a list and people are afraid of ghosts or clowns or killers.
Mm-hmm. Clowns are always a funny one.
They are a funny one. I was never really afraid of them. In fact, as a child, I wanted to be a clown.
Yeah. I was in the same. I never wanted to be a clown, but I loved clowns. I thought they were amazing.
They made people laugh for a living.
Yeah. I never understood the fear of it.
Yeah. So, but it's a very legitimate thing that people are afraid of. In fact, like on the list of things that people are afraid of, it's usually on there somewhere.
It's pretty high up
there. Dentists, public speaking. Yeah.
Clowns are an interesting one. What I always find interesting about clowns is their accidental tie-in to like actual murders and things.
Yeah. It's a big trope in horror to have a clown as the main character.
But then like, there was the worst serial, well, not the worst, but like he kind of shattered serial killing.
Uh-huh.
For a while, who would dress up as a clown?
Well, I think maybe I'm curious, like, you know, talking about trying to find themes in this. It's that innocence of like, oh, but it's a clown. Clowns are good. They're just here to make you laugh and like save the circus.
Yeah, I think it's because clowns
are safe.
They're safe, but they also have that duality where they can be like a clown can be scary. And can do things that seem scary when they're performing, you know?
Yeah.
Like they can be mean clowns or like
or like almost like shape-shifting like, too.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think that duality of
and they have the use of magic.
Exactly. So. Especially if you tie it into like commedia dell'arte.
Yeah.
And that duality of it becomes what's so terrifying, I think. And then as time has gone on and we've lost the duality of clowns and they're just like they make balloon animals and go honk honk. I mean there's also the grotesqueness of them.
Yeah.
Let's never like, forget that.
I mean, well, because original clowns were like they couldn't do anything else in the circus, right?
I'm not sure.
I don't know.
Clowning is somewhat
the
stemmed.
History of clowning. I have to do my research further.
I studied clowning. Fun fact.
What haven't you studied, Nisa?
I know, right? Well, I'm an actor. I study life. thank you. but yeah, the history of clowns is somewhat tied into commedia dell'arte, which is just kind of like a grotesque or an overdoing of normal life tropes. So you have like the lovers who are like super innocent and super into each other. You have the bumbling fool who literally can't do anything right. You have the mean boss.
Yes.
And that they're supposed to be caricatures of these people we see in life. So everything is exaggerated, which is where eventually clowns came out of. And it's that same everything is exaggerated. So like feelings are exaggerated to 100%. So that's why like when a clown is mean.
They're real mean.
They're mean.
If they're sad, they're so sad.
They're so sad.
If they're happy, they're so happy.
So happy. But and that, even that, having people feel things to 100% is freaky.
Yeah. And I think just that, like, heightened emotional expression is like, whoa, we don't do that here.
Yeah, that scares us as a society.
You also mentioned serial killers, which is, like, in urban legends, in, you know, horror, the genre of horror writing.
Serial killers. I read so much about them.
They always pop up.
They do.
So, I mean, and you mentioned once. I think it was more off the show and then I pulled it on, but just like exploration of serial killers allows you to confront like parts of your own sexuality.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that. So what do you think? I mean, certainly I think our fascination about serial killers surpasses the actual actually being serial killers.
Yes. Yeah, obviously. I don't think that we are actually, so I would hope.
Well, I'm not, as far as I'm aware. Maybe, like, accidentally killing ants. But you know what I'm saying? Like, incidents of, like, you know, serial killers at large.
But there is a weirdness. I think, what am I trying to say here? One can not necessarily empathize, but acknowledge that feeling sometimes when you can cut out humanity from an act or an action.
I mean, it's not need-based.
No, obviously. I'm not saying that people, we can become serial killers. But I think that's one of the things when you study serial killers, when you look at serial killers, that can become fascinating because some people might have those moments where there is an act or a thing that you think about and then you immediately
the psychological capacity is there.
Exactly.
You just choose not to step into it.
Yeah. And so for a serial killer, that's somebody who lives in that world for whatever reason, whether it's a mental issue or whether it's things that have happened to them in life or whether, you know, it's something else entirely. For whatever reason, they live in that space that terrifies us.
Yeah. They're so closely linked. I mean, so coming back, R.L. Stein talks about there's this link between fear and humor, but I think there's also really strong ties between fear and sexuality.
Yeah.
And we talked about in Japanese horror, it gets really
intertwined. Yeah. And that's where I think the sexuality of it all kind of comes to play, is that idea of something that what did I said before? I was like, so there. Something that, like, an act that is, like, overwhelming sometimes, I guess.
Something that, I mean, we all have this thought of, like, oh my, or, like, I mean, break it down to something that's really fluffy. Like, you know, some person, like, bumps into you and is rude or something. Like, there's a part of your body that wants to respond.
Yeah.
Or, like, take it up a notch.
It's animalistic, I think. The urge to, like, fight and the urge to fuck are very...
Yeah, very animal attributes,
yeah.
Which we are.
And so, I think that's why some people are very prudish, is because you're afraid of delving into that.
Loss of, like, control or
exactly.
Just, like, stepping into something that's more basal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so that's why a lot of times sexuality can be tied into horror, because it does make you go down into that base part, that part that's just animal brain, that's just
yeah. Rawr. So not quite the same, but, let's switch gears to Stephen King. And I find this amusing that I don't read a lot of Stephen King and you don't read a lot of Stephen King, but we both have read Pet Sematary.
Yes.
So for those of you who are not familiar, Pet Sematary is, it's a guy and his wife and dog and child.
Yeah. And they live the greatest tragedy that a person can live, first it's losing the puppy, which is heartbreaking, yes. But then it's losing.
They live in this neighborhood, though, that if you go up into the woods and up on this cliff, there's like an old Indian burial ground.
It's always an Indian burial ground.
Voodoo energy, yeah. Because it's easy, maybe.
Because
and they
it's,
have
it's
powerful magic
we don't
that we don't understand in the Western world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So... he's like warned about it and just like one of the locals, I guess.
Yeah, this guy who lives, like, next door from him
takes him up
man.
There and he's like, here's this bad thing that happened, they came back but they weren't the same,
yeah.
Warning. And you're just like,
but like recommends he buries his dog there and he's like, you can bury your dog there if you want, but I warn you, he's not going to be the same.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so, well, why would you even, like, recommend then that?
Yeah, why are we doing this?
Like, why did you even bring this up? Like,
what are you getting out of it? Anyway, so, yes, dog comes back, kills child?
I don't know if the dog kills I think the child died in, like, a really accidental way.
Like,
I think he just, like, ran in front of a truck.
Or something happened to the child. So he goes to bury the child there.
Yeah, because the kid
Well, the
was
dog
like,
came back, but obviously not the same. Because
yeah, and they
he
had
was
to kill him again, I thought.
Kill him again somehow.
But I think the child died in a different way, because I just remember there being, like, them not being able to put the kid back together and look right.
Yeah. So he buries the kid up there, and then the kid comes back, but is also not the same. He leaves the kid and the wife at work, so he, like, has to go to work, comes back. Wife has been killed by kid, so he's going up to bury her, and it just got carried away, and you...
The kid's just like, this was too much, man.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. No, that one, that I was telling you earlier that I was freaking out because I knew what was going to happen. Like, I knew as I was reading it that this
It sets up the premise and you're like, oh, I know where this is going.
Exactly. And I was just like, oh, God, no, please don't do this.
We were speaking to anticipation, and that's a huge part of any thrill is just like this... waiting space of like, oh my God, what's gonna happen?
Well, that's what makes psychological thrillers so
thrilling.
Yes. It's just sitting there knowing what's gonna happen. The dramatic irony.
Yeah. Well, it's like
to turn a phrase.
What's the director that's like, someone asked him how long you could have a kiss last on screen, and he was like, what did he say, 5 minutes? And they're like, really, that long? He's like, yeah, but first I put a bomb under the bed. So it's like this idea of like having enough information to be worry and be on edge, but then having to like be held at bay until events unfold as they will.
I had such nightmares when reading that book.
Yeah.
I felt like I was observing something that I couldn't touch. You know, like when you're watching, I guess it's movies, but like if you're seeing an event happen and you know how it's going to play out, and you yourself want to go in and stop it, but you're you can't.
Don't open that door.
Don't do that.
Don't put that there. Don't.
The best example I could think of is when you've immediately made a bad choice in your life that you know has affected you, and then you think over how you get caught cheating on a test, for instance, if we're going back to high school, or like lose a job. Or
something happens and you're like, ugh.
Major, and your life has changed now. And you look back on it and you're like, I can't undo that. That was the entire feeling I had when reading that book.
I think one of the things that horrified me the most is just this idea of innocence being evil. Mm. And that Ray Bradbury actually had a short story where the child is a killer, and this couple's talking about it, and the mom is like, I feel like the baby's gonna kill me, and he's like, don't be absurd, it's a baby. And of course the baby kills her, and he was like, made it look like an accident. And then all of a sudden he started getting these same vibes of like, I think the baby's wanting to kill me. Just like,
about babies evil.
And that's definitely something that the scariest things come from, these innocent things. Another one I was reading about is called The Witches of Worm, where a girl adopts the rent kitten of this litter, and that should be a happy story, right? Oh, except all of a sudden the girl is doing very unusual things that are very violent in nature as a result of this kitten. It's like disturbing on a different level, because then like not even human, it's this animal with this villainous energy. So I might not read that one.
Yeah, no, that seems terrifying.
But if you want to be scared, I hear that that's a good place to start.
I have such a hard time reading scary books.
I do too, which is funny that I'm like, let's talk about it, and then I was like racking my brain and I'm like, I think I read, you know, I definitely read Frankenstein in high school, I definitely read Dracula, and I'm like, I could talk about scary books. I don't actually read now. Well, I will say, were you going to say something?
No. I don't.
Okay. I have more threads to follow. I will say that I've read some wonderfully, like, chilling short stories.
Maybe I love chilling short stories.
Yeah. I think both of them were in Neil Gaiman's Trigger Warnings. Very beautifully written, but haunting. The best, in my mind, the best scary stories are the ones that end and you're just like, wait, like, I already have enough to know what's going to happen, but you're not going to tell me what's going to happen. It just like leaves you open and like, and then they close the doors and you hear rattling, bum, bum, and you're bum. like, No.
No.
Don't go upstairs.
Oh, man. I was telling you earlier about my favorite, but it's Scary Stories You Can Read in the Dark.
Which has wonderful illustrations. If you're looking for some pretty creepy illustrations.
Some of the illustrations are scarier than the story, like by far. But those stories were terrifying. And the thing about them is they never got particularly violent. They were all scary based on that same kind of anticipation or that horror feeling.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of like...
Just like The Waiting.
Yeah, one of the ones that comes to mind is this, I don't remember how it ends, but this wife whose husband was abusive and he demanded that she made him liver and like onions for dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he leaves the house and she's like terrified of him. So she starts... cooking, she buys the liver and she starts cooking it, but then she drops it. Or no, she tastes it because it was so delicious. She ate the entire thing. Oh, that's what happened.
Oh,
and
God.
She freaked out because she knew if her husband came home, he was going to beat her. So she knew of a woman who had just died like that day. So she went and dug up that body because she couldn't go to the butcher shop because that was closed. So she dug up the body, pulled out the liver, buried this woman, which, by the way, why did you make that like liver so early? Like, obviously you had a lot of time before your husband came back home.
Well,
but that's fine.
It's always nonsensical in some way.
So then she takes it, she cooks it, and she gives it to him, and he eats it, and he's like, this is delicious. But then that woman starts to haunt him.
Ooh.
And I believe that she kills him. I think that's how it ends. But like, that's one of the stories that are in there, and so it's that anticipation throughout it and dealing with some heavy issues. Oh, there was the one about the man who's picked up by death. That was just beautiful. yeah.
I laugh. I'm like, oh, God.
Well, my favorite is, and I told you this one, it's the Viper. Viper.
And, he vipes the windows.
He vipes the windows. But throughout it, it's like, the Viper is coming.
Yes.
I am the Viper. I vipe the windows.
It's not a funny story, though.
No, it is. It's that's one of the only ones that's funny.
A funny, scary story?
Yeah, the rest of them are,
those
like,
are my
terrifying,
favorite kind.
But that one ends in this really humor, like, the entire
or
thing.
Or just, like, closure. If a story has no closure, I'm, like, haunted.
It hurts a little bit.
No, you become obsessed, which is, I think, what people love about it. But that makes me feel like I'm insane. Yeah, things have to end. That's my whole thing is, like, if I start reading a book that's scary, I have to finish it. Because what happens if...
That's the only reason why,
like,
I finished Pet
Sematary.
The characters
are still at large.
Yeah.
Yes, I was thinking about something. Alas, it's gone.
Alas. Alas and alack.
I was going to say the other book. So Roald Dahl villains were really, like, if I think back to my childhood, the other, I guess, villain was the wolf from The Neverending Story.
Oh, yeah.
And it's funny because I saw the film first in this instance and then went back and read the book. And the book was not... I read the book hoping that it would make me less afraid of the film. And I wasn't scared of any character in the book the way I was... And I don't know what it was, just this wolf in the closet and he's dying, but not. It was just like,
oh,
scary.
Yeah. I mean, things like that can haunt you. This isn't a book, but my Sweeney Todd for me.
Ooh.
So I watched Sweeney Todd, like a made-for-TV movie version of it that did not have the singing. And my mom had showed that to us because she assumed if we could handle that, then obviously we can handle the musical.
Handle it with his singing.
So I watched that and it didn't scare me at all, but the musical, the way that they...
So dark.
The way that they utilized the humor and the terror in that story.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't sleep for like a week because I was so scared of Sweeney Todd. Of the evil that, I guess, permeated into him.
Yeah.
This idea that someone can be driven to be that destructive. Oh, ooh. But see, it's all about presentation.
Well,
what
and
I'm
it's also
to say.
Just like this. I mean, speaking about vulnerability, like these guys are going to get a shave, and little do they know
they're going to be murdered.
Yeah.
But for me, it's watching this man because he was a good man, and throughout the story of Sweeney Todd, throughout
like
the tale
moments.
Of Sweeney Todd, what you see is you see innocence corrupted, and you see it happen to every character,
which is I mean, swing back to innocence. It's these characters, innocent turning dark.
Yeah, and how
nothing innocence is as you expected it to be.
Exactly, and when evil takes over, when evil wins.
What about monsters?
Ooh, yeah, zombies are mine. For zombies? This, for actually a very similar reason, I realize, which is the lack of human emotions.
But human everything else.
Yeah, so the fact that these things are human, look human, are that, but there is no way to tap into the thing that makes us human, that consciousness. Ah, I'm so scared. I'm so scared of losing my consciousness.
Do you consume, I guess, cultural... Because there's a lot of zombie stuff, and I feel like the past couple of years especially, like, it's been a lot of intrigue with zombies. Do you consume that?
I can't.
Really?
Yeah, I watched a movie called 28 Days Later.
And that is that Sandra Bullock? Is that someone else?
No, it's set in England.
Okay.
It's set in England. So that was the last zombie movie I could watch. And I've watched a couple of other things, but like never fully committed to it because zombies really freak me out. Because in that movie, it was like so easy to lose your consciousness, to lose your humanity. And so you would, and they weren't zombies, quote unquote. Like they were just filled with rage. Yeah. Like if your blood intermingled with their blood, you would get this disease.
Seems like that a pretty easy thing to avoid.
Not really. Not if they're chasing you, trying to eat you.
Yeah. That's the thing is scary. Like there's like the farce zombie that's like, I'm a doofus. Yeah. That's not really threatening. It's the zombies that have like superhuman agility and speed. I'm like, oh, great.
It's just, for me, it's the zombies that are just human. And there's no, it's like a disease and they're still there, but you can't figure out the cure and they've just lost. I've always just been afraid of it, of just losing my humanity. I think it's just, I'm terrified of that conceptually.
I think the thing for me, the monster for me held the most sway or whatever, was sharks. And I never saw Jaws up until this last year. So it wasn't rooted in Jaws. I think it was rooted in all the shark media that came after that. Ah. I remember in my high school, they had these books that were like blue covers and they were always like tales at sea, but like borderline scary tales. Definitely not like horrifying because I couldn't handle that. But just like, oh, there's a scary story. Oh, there's a scary shark. Like, and then that film Deep Blue Sea came out, which was ridiculous.
I remember that one.
I watched that like 40 times, I swear. I don't know why. I just really liked it. Yeah, so sharks were like the monster. And I would have like nightmares of like my room getting flooded. Aww. And I'd have to like save my sister from the sharks. Just like...
Oh, I had a... Sorry to bring this... whatever. I had a nightmare about zombies very recently in which... It happened 3 times. Like, I woke up, went back to sleep, and it was the same.
The same dream.
So the first time the zombies got us, we all died. The second time, I tried to save everybody, and no one would listen to me. And the zombies got us, and we all died. And the third time, I realized that my saving people wouldn't help. Mm-hmm. So I locked them out of the house.
You're like, self-preservation. Sorry,
I
suckers.
I killed, like, 100 people.
Oh, God. Oh, wow. That's great.
It was so, I was just like, who that's am a, I? I'm
that's the space in dreams person. Where you're like,
I'm a bad person.
I don't know what's going on here.
See, but you would save your sister in a shark attack. Me, I was.
No one else, though. Just my sister.
I tried to save them and they didn't listen. Well, no, just once.
Just the once.
The first time I didn't know the zombies were coming.
And the third time you were like, I tried to save you guys last time and you didn't listen. So
pretty
just
much,
leave.
Yeah. So I was just like, bye. And I locked the doors before the zombies came. So the first few people who had gotten in couldn't get in anymore. And that was it. And they died. And
that's...
they were eaten by zombies. And then the zombies came into the house and ate me.
Because that's how your dreams work.
Zombies.
You can't escape the monsters.
Interesting note about that, by the way, with The Walking Dead that's been going on.
People love it.
From what I've been reading about it, because I can't watch it because I have a huge fear of zombies, in case you weren't following, is they're dealing with humanity's evil.
Very quickly shifts away from the zombies and into the people who survived.
After the first like year or so, you'd be able to figure out how to handle zombies, and then it becomes creating civilizations. And so that's what the scary part is that people when given the ability, are evil.
Yeah. Or just pushed into certain circumstances, which is like self-preservation is one of those things where you become really cutthroat.
Locking hundreds of people outside because they wouldn't listen to you.
Yeah, I tried. It's like a video game where you have three lives.
Yeah.
And you're like, nope, oh, nope, oh, nope. Okay, nope. Great. Cannot win. You've been listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. I know you know, but I want to remind you that we have a wonderful new partner selling LP's vinyl upstairs. So we used to be the bike shop radio station, now we're the record shop radio station. And we have all of the records for your record needs and many records that you don't need, but that you will be better from having gotten.
Many records for your record interests.
Yeah, so, and there's something very, very, very meditative about sitting down and listening to a record.
Yeah.
So you owe it to yourself to come check out the selection, see what there is for you to find, and find something that speaks to your soul.
And become that cool person who has, like, records that nobody has heard of. Come on, man.
Yeah. And the staff is very helpful. They'll help you find anything you're looking for that you know of or that you're just looking to try out something new. So
expand your musical mind. Yeah. Peer pressure.
I think we've satisfied that little blurb. Also, announcement to the writers out in the world. Next month is National Novel Writing Month. So, you know, there's lots of infrastructure to support you in your endeavor to write. This month is the giant push, so you can join thousands and thousands of other people writing thousands of words a day and just spitting out that novel. I was talking to a friend about this the other day of, like, you know, I keep reading things talking about how you should write every day, but I also feel like I've talked to a lot of people who get away from things and spend months writing. So you got to do what works for you as a writer. But this is a good way to explore your writer self with a lot of other people.
Yeah, and it's a fun commitment to make, even if it's, I don't know, like, why not now?
Yeah,
just
why not
start
now?
It now, guys.
Just do it. Push.
What's
you have, you know, there's help forums. You can talk about the struggle.
Yeah.
You can talk about how it gets real.
And it's 1 month.
It's just 1 month. I don't think I'm going to write a novel, but I will be writing every day with you guys. So we can talk about that. Nasa?
Well, you know, I just gave you guys slack about it. So
why
I
not?
Guess I'm going to have to.
Why not? No.
Why not, Nasa?
Everyone wants to write a book. You might as well spit it out next month.
Ugh. Ooh, I'm going to have to go through my idea book and go figure out what it is I want to write.
Yeah, that's always. I mean, I sit and write every day, and half the time I'm like, what am I even writing?
What am I saying?
I don't even know. I'm just writing to
write.
I
always have ideas, and then I'm like, can I just sell this idea to somebody who's
going
to make it
in reality? Actualizing an idea. Well, but that's, I mean, you know, my argument to that is like, no, because you're the only person that can tell that story.
Wah.
Wah. Damn it. Okay. Also, I want to bring up Harry Potter. We brushed past him very quickly.
We did, yeah.
But he's worthy of more than a brush. I just was listening to The Half-Blood Prince. Ugh.
So good.
And this time of year, I was just like, you know, Halloween to Christmas, like all the holidays are so wrapped up in Harry Potter for me, because that's when I would get the next year's book as a child. I was like, oh, I get to read the next one. And there's just so many charming moments that, you know, very, I don't know, almost emotional, trying to say, just like images and feelings that J.K. Rowling was really good at creating.
J.K.
So a quick shout out to Harry Potter if you haven't had your yearly fix, maybe.
So good. That entire series.
She can tell a good story.
She can. She can tell a really captivating story, and she ages them very well.
And
which
it's magical.
It is magical. And it's funny because there was that huge controversy with people being like, it's witchcraft. We can't let our children read
it. Oh, that was, that was my mother's.
I always found that
opinion.
Hilarious. I'm like, if people just like took a minute to read it, it's actually a very, not like very
it's
Christian.
Not Christian, no.
But they celebrate Christmas. They
yeah. It's not like down with the.
Yeah, there's
orthodoxy
no. There definitely
or
are Christian elements into
the
it.
The other one that was really as a member of the more conservative religion that I've mentioned before, we had an announcement saying don't consume the Golden Compass.
Oh yeah,
which
that
is
one
also brilliant, but a little bit more pointed in its
yeah. That one definitely had more non-Christian like feels to it.
Yeah.
If I do recall correctly,
anti maybe.
Yeah, anti.
That was creepy too, though. Like the daemons, and like if someone killed your daemon, you were just like without a soul.
Yeah,
it's just like oof. A little scary.
But I just always found it funny because my mom is pagan, and mm-hmm. so I always was like, why are people in a bunch about Harry Potter? Like there is nothing pagan
yeah.
in that story at
that's,
all.
That's one of the things where it's like maybe you should actually consume it.
Yeah, maybe you should just because they're
not,
witches
just like,
doesn't
look
mean
at
that
the yeah
evil.
Look at the genre. That's like okay, so should we not read any book that's ever contained magic?
Yeah,
I think it just scared people because it became so big. Maybe
I think so. I think it was one of those.
I know that I often like to differentiate myself by the things that I don't consume that everyone else does. I'm like, I'm different. I'm not gonna do that thing.
I'm unique.
Yeah. Just like everyone else.
Yep.
Alas. The last thing I want to talk about on our show this evening is mystery novels, because
ooh.
For me, that's something that I've loved probably more and consumed more than, you know, something that would be more like scary or horror.
Mm-hmm.
So have you had any exposure to mystery?
I have, although not a tremendous amount. I feel like I could do more. I could do more in the mystery.
Raymond Carver is a good place to start.
Okay.
Classic mystery with that, like...
I always try to solve the mysteries as I'm
yeah,
reading. And then
I think
like,
that...
I'm not doing this right.
Yeah, or you're like, it's her, and then she's dead. And you're like... It
what?
Wasn't her, but who just killed her?
Like, I had this short book of like Sherlock Holmes, but I think it was like several editions after the original Sherlock Holmes. But there was one where he was like, it's obviously a lie because
this.
The pages that the thing that he found between were supposed, like he found a note between two pages, and the pages he had said couldn't possibly be side by side, because he's like, any book, it's published like even odd on one page as opposed to odd even, and that's what he had said. And I was like, that's crazy.
Yeah,
Sherlock.
That's like the whole spiff of Sherlock is like, I'm gonna see all these insane details that mean nothing to anyone,
right?
But I'll notice them, and then in the end I'll put it together to solve them.
I'm like, that's just not even fair. How am I supposed to,
yeah,
like,
how do I compete?
Like, what, do you want me to know everything?
Yeah, I think it does lead intrigue into like being more observant, you know. He'll just be like, because there's always like a rational thing that he was like, oh, I saw that you had a bit of mud on your shoe, and that it blah, blah, blah. And then I saw like
this,
the other, like, it's,
ooh, I love
observations.
Like that. Yeah, I love that. I'm like, oh.
I'm trying to recall. There was one, a series I got into in college that was this like 70-year-old woman who became a CIA agent. It's like Mrs. Somebody.
Hmm.
Oh, shucks. I'm not going to remember her name on the spot.
It wouldn't be... No. Oh, Murder, She Wrote, would it?
No.
Angela Lansbury.
No, but tell me about that.
I haven't actually watched it. It was just really big back in the 90s. Angela Lansbury was a 70-year-old woman who solved murders in her small town. I just always found that as like a really funny concept to think of.
They're the least expected.
Yeah, right? Like, what? Why are you... What? And I think that's, of course, the humor of it is that she should be at home making tea for her grandchildren, but instead she's out and about solving crimes, because passion hits you no matter what age.
Well, and I love it because it does introduce this element of like the least expected and this harmless old woman that's just like actually trying to get these like evil drug lords to confess to something.
I know, right?
Oh, gosh. I'm really...
Did I vamp for you to find the...
You did vamp. Well, it's still not coming, and I'm not having a hard time finding it.
It's
out there. I'll put in the notes.
I'm also just going to do a quick shout out to Johnny the Homicidal Maniac as far as comic books go. I forgot about that one. But
Johnny
really
the Homicidal Maniac. Death Note, also,
Death
if
Note.
You like comics. We had a beautiful conversation with Duncan last week after the show in which we talked about the tropes of Alice in Wonderland and how they speak to so many people. We could have an entire show about that. We'd have to put a little bit more thought and energy into it.
Oof.
But
but it's completely there.
Worthy of mentioning.
Tied in very much in the same way horror is with sexuality. I think it has its own kind of tie-in to sexuality and puberty and coming of
falling
age.
Through things and
I think that's what's captivating eating is that there is an element of horror things. To it.
But it's scary because it's one horror. I think psychological aspects, it's scary because it's alternate realities, alternate worlds where control is not absolute.
Exactly.
There's other characters influencing your journey and
logic or the logic that you enter in with doesn't.
Or the parameters of what is possible and what is not possible.
Breaks.
Changes.
And it would be interesting had I thought of this before to think of the line between fantasy and horror. Especially with something like that, where it could easily tip one way or the other.
Yeah. That's a lot of fantasy novels came into my mind as I was researching. I was like, oh, there was that scene that was so disturbing. Oh, but that was like a fantasy. Yeah.
Oh, well, I mean, if we're going to touch upon that, we're talking
disturbing
about
scenes.
Like Cinderella and the birds pecking the eyes out of her evil stepsisters. Snow White and them forcing the evil witch to wear hot iron shoes.
All of the fairy tales are actually horror
stories.
They're
really scary
if you haven't heard.
They're terrifying. Little Mermaid commits suicide. It is a scary, scary world, man.
Yeah. I like what you said earlier. We're talking about, killers. But you're like, there's this part of the human psychology that you, like, sense and then average person will be like, oh nope, I'm not gonna go there. And there are people, or like maybe all the cocktail of the certain variables are gonna put you in a situation where you're like, great, I'm going here. Mm-hmm. But I lost it.
I don't know. But what's scary about that is releasing into it seems sometimes if you've had a particularly harsh life, I've walked the line of this myself, releasing into insanity seems
a nice alternative. Oh, we're talking about fairy tales. So yeah, it's just that speaks to it too, of like a mother so desperate to have her daughter be queen that she's like, I'm gonna chop off your toes and it will work. Don't question me, I'm your mother. Like these things of just like desperate measures.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh,
committing to something that far, but like what are you willing to go through?
Yeah, indeed.
Oof.
Yeah. Well, so you guys have lots of material and inspiration for your writing starting on November 1st.
Oh, yeah. Pre-writes. Start getting some pre-writes going on.
Right.
That's coming
Start
soon.
Mapping out your ideas. There is the website that has a lot of support, and they're on all the social medias, too. So you can kind of join the community. Speaking of community, Radio Free Brooklyn has a really great one. Lots of interesting people. Who have a diverse range of interests and passions and lives. If you want to join the community, you can do so online. You can also pledge, help support this and other shows that we have. Public radio, ad-free.
Public radio, number
all that
one.
Jazz. And it's real fun, and we have some great parties. Nace and I had a blast at, I think, two parties ago. I didn't make it to the last one.
Yeah. Oh, my God. But it was amazing.
But it is a party. And
I like to say it's the type of party I always imagined I would be experiencing when I moved to New York.
Yeah. It's a pretty classic New York party. Lots of things happening. Naked people.
Also,
drugs, alcohol.
Also, if you are under, or I don't know, if you're able to enjoy Halloween coming up, which is like tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow.
And if you already did, I hope you are recovering well from your Halloween revelry.
Yes, Halloween well. It's like a weekend of Halloween because it's not happened yet. So you can Halloween.
When it's on a Monday, I think that you have that excuse to go multiple days. But then which day is the official Halloween? Like,
Monday.
How much candy do you have to buy?
Ooh.
Yeah, for those trick-or-treaters out there.
I feel like it's always like brought. I feel like it's usually the Saturday. So if it's a Friday, Sunday, or Monday, people still celebrate it that Saturday. Because Sunday's a religious day and Friday's like, maybe if Friday or Saturday it gets
pushed
Friday to one
or
of those.
Saturday.
My Halloween definitely took place on Friday, and I definitely did not practice moderation, and I definitely recovered yesterday instead of partying more.
I had some fun bar hopping. Ooh, fun. I was dressed as Navi, and my boyfriend was dressed as Link from Zelda Ocarina of Time.
I was a horse jockey.
Ooh, that sounds fun.
It was fun. And bar hopping, and anyways, this is fun. So I feel like we're just babbling. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. This is Ink and Worm. You can catch the podcast. You can catch other shows with interesting guests. And as always, reach out to us and be a part of the Ink and Worm community. So many communities. And I'll leave you with the word, take it or leave it. Confabulate.
Remember when you ran away and I got on my knees and begged you not to leave because I go berserk? Well, you left me anyhow, and then the days got worse and worse, and now you see I've gone completely out of my mind. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha! You thought it was a joke, and so you laughed. You laughed when I had said that losing you would make me flip my lid. Right? You know you laughed. I heard you laugh. You laughed and laughed, and then you left. But now you know I'm utterly mad. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha. To the happy home with trees and flowers and chirping birds and basket weavers who sit and smile and twiddle their thumbs and toes, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha. I cooked your food. I cleaned your house. And this is how you pay me back for all my kind, unselfish, loving deeds. Ha? Well, you just wait, they'll find you yet, and when they do, they'll put you in the ASPCA, you mangy mutt. And they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, they're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha, to the funny farm where life is beautiful all the time, and I'll be happy to see those nice young men in their clean white coats, and they're coming to take me away, ha-ha, to the happy home with trees and